Hello, everyone. My name is Aaron Thibodeau. I'm a senior at Appleton East High School. And first, I'd like to actually apologize. Before, when we were guessing what was in the box, I thought it would be funny to write Y chromosome because father. But I know that the Y chromosome has nothing to do with being a father or your gender identity. So I'd like to revoke that really quick. Sorry about that. But getting back on track, I think that this is actually exciting getting to share with everyone because the perception of masculinity can be different between generations. So I hope I can bring a teenager's perspective to light in the next few minutes. For starters, we all know the unfortunately similar experience where one man or boy will degrade another for stepping outside of stereotypic boundaries. Now, I can see these examples of toxic masculinity possibly coming from places of insecurity or embarrassment, which is usually referred to as the man box. Contrary to these situations, there are always young men boldly standing out as different and others who support and understand. This awesome attitude leads to my basic idea towards what masculinity is today. It may sound funny, but I promise I'll explain. I refer to it as the who cares movement. Basically, it's where people simply don't have a problem with the way someone behaves or what they identify as. And I'm noticing this movement flourish more and more with each generation for the most part. I'm seeing more and more young male identifying straight men loving and supporting other men who are perhaps more feminine or non-stereotypical. A lot of the ideas that men have to be a certain way rooted from past beliefs that aren't exactly favorable anymore. More children are being raised in the presence of people of all kinds, and when they see that kind of diversity at a young age, they grow to appreciate and understand it. I can be honest with my peers about my true self, and I'm very blessed and thankful for the fact that nobody cares. Things are changing for the better when it comes to masculinity, and at this point, I think the word hardly has a meaning. All it should and needs to refer to, perhaps, is a genre of apparel. Not color, not sexuality, and not hobbies. When people choose to stop making assumptions about someone because they physically appear to identify as a man, I think that is what makes such a big difference in the community. So thank you everyone for being an accepting and understanding community as always, and most of all, for not caring.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Peter Seek, and I'd like to talk to you about hair. At some point in my life, around 6th or 7th grade, I decided to grow my hair out. This was an aesthetic decision born of restlessness. I had been keeping my hair very short for most of my life, and I decided it was time for a new look. By the time my hair had reached about chin length, I started encountering the most innocent of mistakes and questions. Girls with hair easily twice the length of mine asked why my hair was long. Cashiers and strangers occasionally addressed me as ma'am, etc. None of these were insulting, and none of them were harmful. They simply forced me to confront a basic truth. What I want to look like and what a man usually looks like are not the same thing. Now, as my hair grew longer, I took pride in rebelling against expectations. Admittedly, this was a very tame rebellion, but I was maybe 12 at the time, so I'll forgive myself. I eventually had to cut it for a more practical reason. I had a job that required me to bend over and pick things up all day, and my hair was a logistical nightmare, so I cut it much shorter. Although I very much enjoyed the new way it looked, and although it made my job significantly easier, I did feel a slight tinge of guilt for adopting a more traditional style. It wasn't until much later that I realized that by devoting myself to rebelling against masculinity, I had still tied myself to it, not allowing myself to simply pursue what I wanted. I think there are a number of ways in which I've tied myself to the very things I seek to reject. For the subtle, overarching expectations we encounter in any culture, it's important to remember that we do not reject these by focusing on how much we dislike them. We reject them by simply removing them from a place of importance in our mind. This means striking out into uncharted territory. This can be uncomfortable, and it does not always yield satisfying results. And this is where I am now. I no longer seek to actively and directly defy expectations of masculinity, I seek to create my own version. This entails quite a bit of work and questioning. What does masculinity mean, and why do I want to emulate it? If I define it differently from somebody else, is it truly the same thing? These are questions I don't yet have answers for, but I want to discover them for myself. The first steps are the simple realizations. Yes, I think it's ridiculous that all men's formal wear looks the same, but I do like the way I look in a suit. And yes, I think men should have more variety in their hairstyles, but I think close cut does suit me. I've been doing my best not to carry the full weight of changing gender norms, and I think the healthiest way to approach that is by simply being myself, with no thought of expectation. Thank you.
Good morning. As a prior martial artist, I first read the following story 30 years ago as retold by the late Aikido Master Dobson in the 1986 book titled How Can I Help? By Ram Dass and Paul Gorman. As a young man, Dobson went to Japan to study Aikido under the Japanese master who founded this martial art. Ultimately, Dobson became a fourth degree black belt, highly respected American Aikido master, co-author of 5 books, worked with conflict resolution for 20 years, and conducted seminars called When Push Comes to Shove for business executives. Unfortunately, Dobson died at age 55 in 1992. Here is his story, A Soft Answer. The train clanked and rattled through the suburbs of Tokyo on a drowsy spring afternoon. Our car was comparatively empty, a few housewives with their kids in tow, and some old folks out shopping. I gazed absently at the drab houses and the dusty hedgerows. At one station, the doors opened, and suddenly the afternoon quiet was shattered by a man bellowing incomprehensible curses. The man staggered into our car. He wore laborer's clothing, and he was big, drunk, and dirty. Screaming, he swung at a woman holding a baby. The blow sent her spinning into the laps of an elderly couple. It was a miracle the baby was unharmed. Terrified, the couple jumped up and scrambled toward the end of the car. The laborer aimed a kick at the old woman, but missed as she scuttled to safety. This so enraged the drunk that he grabbed the metal pole in the center of the car and tried to wrench it out of its stanchion. I could see that one of his hands was cut and bleeding. The train lurched ahead. The passengers froze with fear, and I stood up. I was young then, some 20 years ago, and in pretty good shape. I'd been putting in a solid 8 hours of Aikido training every day for the past 3 years. I liked to throw and grapple, and I thought I was tough. The trouble was my martial arts skill was at the drab houses and at one station, the doors opened, was shattered by a man. The man staggered into our big, drunk, and woman holding a baby. The blow, it was a miracle the baby was unharmed, into the car. The laborer held to safety. This is the center of the car, and either one of his hands was cut and bleeding with fear, and I stood up in pretty good shape. I has the mind to fight, has broken his kitchen, he defeated. We must study how to resolve conflict, not how to start it. This is it, I said to myself as I got to my feet. People are in danger, and if I don't do something, I'll probably get hurt. Seeing me stand up, the drunk saw a chance to focus his rage. Ah, he roared, a foreigner. You need a lesson in Japanese manners. I held lightly to the commuter strap overhead and gave him a slow look of disgust and dismissal. I planned to take this turkey apart, but he had to make the first move. I wanted him mad, so I pursed my lips and blew him an insolent kiss. All right, he hollered, you're gonna get a lesson. And he gathered himself for a rush at me. A split second before he moved, somebody shouted, hey! It was ear splitting. I remember being hit by the strangely joyous, lilting quality of it, as though you and a friend had been searching diligently for something, and he had suddenly stumbled upon it. Hey! I wheeled to my left, the drunk spun to his right. We both stared down at a little old Japanese man. He must have been well into his 70s, this tiny gentleman sitting there immaculate in his kimono. He took no notice of me, but beamed delightedly at the laborer, as though he had a most important, most welcome secret to share. Come here, the old man said in easy vernacular, beckoning to the drunk. But come here and talk with me, he waved his hand lightly. The old man followed as if on a string. In an easy vernacular, beckoning to the drunk. The old man followed as if a friend of those should I talk to you. The drunk now had his back to me. If his elbows moved so much as a millimeter, I would drop him in his socks. The old man continued to beam at the laborer. What you been drinking? He asked lightly, his eyes sparkling with interest. I've been drinking sake, the laborer bellowed back, and it's none of your business. And flecks of spittle splattered on the old man. Oh, yes, that's wonderful, the old man said with delight. Absolutely wonderful. You see, I love sake too. Every night, me and my wife, she's 76, you know, we warm up a little bottle of sake and take it out to the garden, and we sit on an old wooden bench. We watch the sun go down. We look to see how our persimmon tree is doing. My grandfather planted that tree, you know, and we worry about whether it will recover from these ice storms we had last winter. Our tree has done rather better than I expected, though, especially when you consider the poor quality of the soil. It's gratifying to watch when we take our sake and go out to enjoy the evening, even when it rains. He looked up at the laborer, eyes twinkling. As he struggled to follow the old man's conversation, the drunk's face began to soften, his fists slowly unclenched. Yeah, he said slowly, I love persimmons too, as his voice trailed off. Oh yes, said the man, smiling. I'm sure you have a wonderful wife. No, the laborer replied, my wife died. And very gently, swaying with the motion of the train, the big man began to sob. I don't got no wife. I don't got no home. I don't got no job. I'm so ashamed of myself. Tears rolled down his cheeks and a spasm of pure despair rippled through his body. Now it was my turn. Standing there in my well-scrubbed youthful innocence, my make this world safe for democracy righteousness, I suddenly felt dirtier than he was. Just then the train arrived at my stop. As the doors opened, I heard the old man cluck sympathetically. My, my, he said, that is a difficult predicament indeed. Sit down here and tell me about it. I turned my head for one last look. The laborer was sprawled out on the seat, his head in the old man's lap, the old man softly stroking his filthy matted hair. As the train pulled away, I sat down. Meanness had been accomplished with kind words. I had just seen Aikido tried in combat, and the essence of it was love. I would have to practice the art with an entirely different spirit. It would be a long time before I could speak about the resolution of conflict. Thank you.
Thank you. missed my old man tonight. And I wish he was here with me, with his corny jokes and his cameras. He could take a portrait of who you really are. That's not an easy thing to do, but no one ever knew a more charming creature on this earth than mine. He was a soldier in the big war, in the U.S. Army Air Corps, in a C-47 disguised over Rome, sending letters to the folks back home. And after they dropped the bomb, he came home and married Mom. And not long after that, he was my old man. Oh, the fights we had when my brothers and I got him mad. He'd get all riled up and he'd start to shout, and I knew what was coming, so I tuned him out. And now the old man's gone, and I'd give all I own just to hear what he said when I wasn't listening to my old. Missed my old man tonight. I can almost see his face. He was always hard to understand when his body locked him up inside his mind. And for the first time since he died, late last night I cried. I wondered when I was gonna do that for my old man.
Hello. Thanks for that song. God, that hit home. Happy Father's Day to everybody. And I got a little talk about reframing masculinity. I grew up in the 50s and I was taught that gender was binary and masculinity was the more powerful and wise of the genders. To be a real masculine man, I had to be fearless, unemotional, and decisive. Subduing my emotions was essential if I wanted to join the group of real men. Physical prowess had to be tested at all times so that I would know my place. I had to keep my image as well as my wardrobe. I had to keep it up. God forbid I wear a jacket with darts, which happened in eighth grade. It was a hand-me-down from my sister. Now, the rules were expressed in overt and covert ways. You probably heard them all. Be strong at grandma's funeral, quit crying, run like a girl, make up your mind, is it A or B? What are you afraid of? Knock it off. Also, there were war movies and cop shows that reinforced the messages spoken by family, teachers, and friends. The media contained many covert messages about the mystery of masculinity. I can sum it up in two words, John Wayne. Why couldn't I be strong emotionally like John and still exhibit caring and empathy like him? Why couldn't I face my fears and overcome them like John? How come I made snap decisions without considering that I would greatly benefit from a time of discernment? Mostly, I felt like I didn't measure up. When the 60s came along, I joined the counterculture. Hippiedom saved my life. Coffee shops were where discussions that challenged the status quo. Hugh Hefner legitimized masturbation. Also, the women's movement happened. All this showed me that it was possible to have a different ethic. I started to open my mind, realized I didn't have to follow societal rules of being masculine. Over the years, I had gotten in touch with my emotions and decided to become an actor in life as opposed to a reactor. My goal was to be truly myself. I'm a nerd, and I have some androgynous characteristics. I believe both male and female humans can and do exhibit masculine traits such as strength, courage, independence, leadership, and assertiveness. The term femininity means gentleness, empathy, humility, and sensitivity. I looked it up. Turns out I consider these to be my traits as well. Where does that leave us? These all seem to be human traits, regardless of the plumbing. Gender roles are becoming more fluid. This all leads to a question I still ponder. How would I assign gender to another human being if all I knew were their actions and not their plumbing? I believe it best to listen to what they say they are. What I think is important for me as a man is to embrace all parts of myself and to let my actions define me. In conclusion, I view masculinity not as a binary opposed to femininity, rather as a color palette that includes masculinity, androgyny, femininity, and whatever else. Thank you.
Good morning. And thank you so very much for welcoming us members of the men's group into your home this morning. My name is Dave Gerlach, and I have been a longtime member of both the fellowship as well as the men's group. It is a subgroup of the fellowship. What I'm hoping is that this morning the thoughts that have already been shared about men and masculinity have been helpful to you. We had hoped to share with you our visions for the future, as well as highlighting the experiences of men today who are now living in a very different world from the past, as well as what some of the challenges are that still face us as men. Now, my own experience growing up in the 50s was very different from what I currently experience. In general, the men of my father's generation were not very warm, nurturing, sympathetic, or involved with their children. And sadly, they missed out on the blessings that flow from being intimately involved with the daily life of their children. And so a change was very much long overdue. Well, now, one man who helped to usher in a change, and he was an early leader of the men's movement, was a man by the name of Sam Keen. He was a writer of many thought-provoking books on the subject of the men's movement. But what I want to share with you this morning is some reflections about the idea of a new man, one who arose from the old man of the past. And what I want to do is I want to paraphrase what Sam Keen wrote regarding this new man in his book called Fire in the Belly. Sam Keen put out a questionnaire and received over 6,000 replies from men and women. Now, part of that questionnaire focused on the subject of who is an ideal new man. And so what qualities did these people identify that they would want in an ideal man? Now, the former qualities expected from the old man are now mostly devalued, as we heard from some of the other guys who were speaking, like striving for success at any cost, obsession with power, violence, that sort of thing. They are just no longer considered of paramount importance. But the qualities that Sam Keen found that people wanted in a new man were an ability to gain access to his inner world of feeling, receptivity, and spirituality. This new man should be more sensitive and possess more self-doubts. He is no longer that tower of strength, unbending, substantial, and solid. What is desired in this new man is someone who is not someone who is unyielding like granite, but rather is fluid like a body of water, able to change shape, freeze, and boil, yet retain its watery essence. He can become what the situation demands. He can discern what the need of the moment is and fill the role as needed. He is no longer that rugged individual that was once depicted in the cowboy TV shows of the 50s and 60s. Think John Wayne here, as Tom Pinneberg just pointed out a little while ago. There is desire that the new man should have passion, compassion, and honor. He should be less violent and kinder, and yet still retain a touch of wildness. Over the years, there has been a rapid change in gender roles so that both men and women are faced with impossibly high expectations. This new superman is supposed to be oh so sensitive and self-actualizing. Not too concerned with money or career, but still ready to fight to protect home and country, and competitive enough to provide a good living for his family. Now, no one says how these contradictory qualities fit within the same psyche. This expectation is a complicated road for men to navigate. Now, Sam Keen ends his book with a call for men to be nurturers of our fragile earth and to protect the weak and the disenfranchised. This is a big task, but he asks, when talking about ideals, shouldn't our reach exceed our grasp? Thank you very much.